Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know.
I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Welcome to Clash of the Titles, Farch, the podcast that for 1 week only this March pits two movies with something in common picked by fans of the show and puts them in a fight to the death to see which one comes out victorious. This week, in the red corner, writer and director Martin McDonagh's debut feature as Colin Farrell and Brendan Gleeson bicker their way around Belgium because it's 2008 and we're in Bruges. While in the blue corner, writer and director Martin McDonagh's most recent feature as Colin Farrell and Brendan Gleeson argue their way around Ireland because it's 2022 and were with the Banshees of Inisherin.
Brendan, your sorrows, huh?
What sorrows?
You know, being a sad old ugly little man. One gay beer, please.
How'd your date go?
My date involved two instances of extreme violence. One instance of her hand on my cock and my finger up her thing, which lasted all too briefly. And then I was the way. One instance of me stealing 5 grams of a very high quality cocaine, and one instance of me blinding a puffy little skinhead. So all in all, my evening pretty much balanced out fine.
You got 5 grams of coke?
I got 4 grams on me and 1 gram in me, which is why my heart is going like the clappers, as if I'm about to have a heart attack.
Forgive me, Father, for I have sinned. It's 8 weeks since my last confession, I think.
Go on, Colin.
Just the usual, I suppose, Father. The drinking and the impure thoughts. And a bit of pride, I suppose, although I never really saw that as a sin, but I'm here now.
And how's the despair?
Not so much of it of late, thanks be.
And why aren't you talking to Padraig Sullivan no more?
That wouldn't be a sin now, would it, Father?
It wouldn't be a sin, no. But it's not very nice either, is it?
So, it's a massive McDonough melee this week, but which film will be victorious? Let's find out. Welcome to Clash of the Titles.
Release the Kraken!
Hello, Clashbutters. Ow, can fucking swans not be somebody's fucking thing? I'm Alex Zane.
I'm Vicky Crompton.
I'm Chris Tilley.
Happy birthday!
Yay! Oh,
thank you.
21 again.
Yep.
Happy birthday, old man.
How you feeling?
Good.
Yeah.
Nice to be with the pair of you.
Yeah.
Rather than stuck at home.
What a privilege to be with you on your birthday.
Yeah.
I feel very lucky.
Yeah, and doing two films I'm super excited about. Mm. It's fallen nicely.
But genuinely, how old are you?
Just a year and a week older than you.
37.
There we go.
Yep.
That put him on the spot.
Yep, exactly. Good. Very happy birthday.
Thank you.
Great to be spending it with you. And indeed, welcome to Farch, our one and only listener-suggested pairing this March.
Yeah, I'm just actually checking because we know what the rest of March is. Maybe we've nicked some others as well. It's not beyond the realms of possibility. But no, this was an accidental one, really.
Mm. Yeah, and also, if we're stealing them, it means you have come up with some great suggestions for us that we are going to credit you for as and when we use them.
As and when we remember to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
This actually also came out of me a few weeks ago, the Wednesday Clash Queue. I asked the audience what of this year's Oscar-nominated Best Pictures we should do in a clash. Mm-hmm. And Daydreamer, a.k.a. Damo Tenenbaum, suggested this. Same director, same leads, both dark comedies, both great films. But then that made me look in the Google mail
fucking
account.
Google document.
And yes, Lawrence Sainsbury suggested this pairing as well a few weeks ago.
So this is Lawrence and...
Lawrence and Damo, but Lawrence has sent a proper email. Is it time to read that out?
Yeah, go on. Let's hear from him.
Okay. In Bruges v Banshees of Inisherin. Tragic comedies made by many of the same people. Male friendships and the differing values you can have from your friends. Mental illness shown in different ways. Violent and cruel authority figures. In Bruges, available on Netflix and most charity shops. He also says, thanks so much for making the pod. You've caused me to watch so many great films. A Few Good Men and Rosemary's Babies went straight into my top 10 and I definitely wouldn't have seen them if not for the pod.
Wow.
I'm all in. Mm. P.S. I watched the full Monty recently. I hate to say it, but I think Vicky might be right. It's all in the way he says
Why
it.
Why I hate to say it? Why I hate to say it?
God.
Why I hate to say
because
it?
Because it's not right. Because it's not possible.
I'm curious. I mean, I don't want to snag on that.
Lawrence, no. It's not right. Do not open this can of worms. I believe you called it Rosemary's Babies, which if there is a sequel in the works, it should Brilliant. Definitely be that. She has twins this time.
There is a new Rosemary's Baby in the works coming out this year, I think. I think it's a prequel.
Okay. Nice. All right, so the clue V gave on last week's show was...
I'll have a Martin McDouble, please. One with waffles and one with fish.
And if that wasn't easy enough, what happened, Chris?
We posted both shows at the same time on Monday. So if you wanted to cheat, you could. And I think some people did. So I didn't bother putting up a second clue.
Yeah. So the guesses were arguing on our Twitter at ClashPod. If you want to give us a follow, we're also on Instagram and TikTok at ClashPod as well. And if you're in the business for a little extra class of the visual variety, completely free of charge, why not subscribe to our Clash of the Titles YouTube channel? So who won this week with the first correct guess? By which I mean who finished the episode first and literally wrote the films that were announced on Twitter? Congratulations to all of you who listened to the pod first thing and heard the films announced. Gemma Page, Andrew Logan, Mark Lewis, Matt T, Gary Bailey, Rich Cracknell. But the first person to listen to the episode, hear the films announced and get on Twitter, well done, Matt.
Listen to the episode, jump to the end, maybe. Also, let's be fair, it's not beyond the realms of possibility that people heard Vicky's clues and got the answer.
That is true.
That's right.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is what I like.
It was an easy clue.
Yeah, it was.
It was an easy clue. So, Matt, your prize is a weekend away on the fabulous island of Inisherin. Atoll protected, terms and conditions apply. Please know Inisherin does not actually exist. Connection section, Mark McDonough, Colin Farrell, Brendan Gleeson, boom.
Yeah. Colin Farrell is a lovable baby. Colin Farrell cries.
Mm. Existential crises, questioning faith, ethical codes, morality, confession. Killing something by accident.
Yes.
Child and a donkey get killed by accident.
Sure. Brendan likes culture in both. Colin doesn't.
Yep.
Melancholy.
Yeah, despair.
In both films, Colin asks Brendan to go to the pub and Brendan says no.
name check places me and my family's from in Bruges, Croydon, in Banshees, Kildare.
Nice.
Yeah, very bit personal.
That's lovely.
I felt like he's making these films for me.
Yes, you should.
I've got one. It's quite good. Apologies for the use of the R word. I am quoting. In Bruges, Colin says, "If I grew up on a farm and was retarded, Bruges might impress me," which isn't a million miles away from his character description in Banshees of Inisherin. Mm.
Yeah.
Women calling men out on their immaturity and stupidity. That's what the hotel owner does in the first film and Siobhan spends the second film doing.
Mm-hmm.
Any more for any more?
No.
No.
A lot of connections, though.
A lot.
More than we thought.
Yes.
All right, then. So, on Thursday, I'll be screaming like a banshee of Inisherin, which means today, Chris is heading to Belgium. Sadly, not to the city Vicky is sponsored by, Ghent.
I do also like Bruges.
Oh, do you?
But it's not Ghent. I've said it before.
The contract was for Ghent. The contract to talk about, oh, those chips. Oh, that beer.
That beer.
Oh,
yeah.
That beer. And
just,
those
the vibes.
Chips. Yeah.
Just the vibes. Just the vibes. Castle. It's got a castle.
Yep. So if anyone from the Ghent Tourist Board is listening, we're happy to do a live show in Ghent.
We'll go there via Megabus.
Shut up. Right. Rather than being Ghent, he is in Bruges. Chris, take us on a journey.
This is the story of a pair of foul-mouthed hitmen who are sent to Bruges following a botched job, only to find themselves in a metaphorical and at times literal purgatory. That's my synopsis, but I also checked out how Media Guide described it, a website concerned with the darkness we're bombarded with by movies and aims to propel uplifting and positive content. This is how they described the movie. Strong mixed pagan worldview with strong Christian content and some moral issues discussed but not resolved in an uplifting way.
Okay.
At least 153 mostly strong obscenities, many F-words, 5 or 6 strong profanities and 3 light profanities. Very strong violence includes shootings with blood and some gore, man falls from great heights, some fighting, chasing and suicidal attempts, though one suicide is prevented deliberately. Implied fornication and prostitution, references to getting prostitutes and no sex, no nudity...
Good.
Alcohol use and drunkenness, smoking, drug use, a man steals cocaine and pills from 2 drug dealers, and man spouts racist theories when high and drunk, then later apologises and blames it on the cocaine. How's that for a synopsis?
It's a hell of a synopsis. I mean, it's sort of weird that they're using the word pills.
It's like they know.
Yeah, it's sort of like, who's running this website? We're the moral compass, but we're not going to say ecstasy tablets, we're going to say pills.
No, I think because it's more colloquial, they should have said just drugs.
Yeah, sure.
But they identified them as definitely pills.
Also, why do you need to report there's chasing in this? At what point is someone going, I need to know if there's chasing in the film, because that's unacceptable.
That's a red line for
also
me.
I feel like Media Guide is writing something that's designed to put you off watching the film.
Yeah.
I'm not walking, I'm running to see this based on that description. Speaking of which, did you walk or run to see this movie, Alex?
I've definitely seen it once before. I definitely watched it at home. This is the second viewing for me. That is all I really have. I don't remember a lot about this, which could be either wine or it just wasn't very memorable.
Oh, I've got one of them covered up. Vicky?
It was a word of mouth thing. So around the time it came out, a friend of mine saw it and she just kept going on. She just kept saying, you've got to see this film. I wasn't that interested. You know, for whatever reason, I wasn't that interested. And she's like, Colin Farrell saying in Bruges all the time will crack you up. And I was like, well, we'll see about that. So I watched it and I thought it was absolutely hilarious. And then watched it again of my own volition just a few years after. So this is a third one.
Okay. So I was a big Martin McDonagh fan. I went to the theatre to see Pillow Man, one of the best plays I've ever seen.
Okay.
It's back on later this year. Well
Hasn't
worth
it got
going.
Lily Allen in it.
Lily Allen's in it. I don't know if that's a positive or a negative.
I don't know.
But great play. And also a big fan of his film he made, Six Shooter.
Right.
Which won an Academy Award.
Yes.
For best short film, even though it's 27 minutes long.
Right.
It's a long shot with Brendan Gleeson. So I was quite excited about this one coming down the pipe and went to the cinema. Absolutely loved it. One of my favourite films of that year. And then revisited about 5 years ago at about 10 p.m. on Christmas Eve when my dad says, why don't you put something on? And everyone else had gone to bed and we'd had some wine. Because I said, I know a Christmas film.
Right.
And we watched this, but the wine got in the way. I think dad fell asleep. And I was like, funny still. So this was the third watch for me.
Okay.
So, making of, let's go some sort of back in time to Martin McDonagh being a playwright. Although... I've listened to a few interviews with him lately. quite disparaging of playwriting.
Is he?
Never cared much for plays, he says frequently. Movies were always my first love. This was a way in.
He's written about 100 plays.
Celebrated plays as well.
Yeah.
To honour around the world.
But it's interesting, when I saw Banshees in Fantastic Fest in Austin last year, he was there and he did say afterwards that the reason he's doing movies rather than plays is hardly anyone sees plays and they get forgotten about really quickly, whereas movies are there forever. And I think this could sort of tie in with what we talk about on Thursday about what that film's about maybe. Mm. But it's interesting. He was just, he wanted something that was permanent rather than something that sort of came and went. And so that's why his first love was movies. He went to Bruges. He thought it was beautiful. Then he got bored.
Have you been to Bruges?
Yeah.
Have
only
you?
Briefly.
No, have you?
Yeah. I spent ages in Bruges. When we were in the thing about Ghent is I went to Bruges first.
We're talking about Bruges.
No, wait, we were.
How many mentions do you need to give it before you're off the clock?
I don't know.
Read the contract.
So when we were driving around Europe in the camper van, we went to Bruges first because it's just geographically, that's the direction we were going. And Lucy came to see us and our friend Tony, and we didn't have any money, so we couldn't go up the bell tower and that square where they, you know, we had drinks there, and it is gorgeous, but we were there for quite a long time, so we couldn't afford to move on or something, and you do get really bored really quickly, and you do get this, and obviously I'd seen the film by then, so that was like influencing me to becoming bored. And then the reason I love Ghent is because you go to Ghent, you like, can't get bored in Ghent. So that's why it's better. But Bruges is gorgeous and I feel very attached to it, and I would like to go back.
Cha-ching.
is that actually the catchphrase? You can't get bored in Ghent. Really?
So Chris asked the question, what did you think of Bruges? And your answer is Ghent is better.
That's actually my answer, yeah. Right. Although Bruges is lovely.
Can we get back to Bruges?
Yeah.
Madonna said, well, I was first
also
there.
Also, Antwerp's nice. Okay, go.
I had diverging feelings about the place. I started thinking of two characters who might respond to Bruges in distinct ways, and I started writing about them with specific parts of Bruges for them to interact in and around. And he said he sees the two characters as two different sides of his brain.
Okay.
He said, I didn't write the parts for anyone specifically, and in fact, originally, Ray and Ken were written as Londoners. I only changed them to Irish after we'd cast Colin and Brendan. Everything seemed to fall into place after that. And actually, watching it this time, it's clear that they're Londoners, really. It's just the accent that's different. Mm. Like, it's a London story. They're London characters. They've done a London thing. They work for a London person. They're just London... Well, one London hitman and one kind of London hitman. Mm.
But he does call it... We'll talk about this more on Thursday because it's a lot more relevant to Banshees of Inisherin. But he does call it an Irish film, although he's very careful about how he defines what an Irish film is and whether he's making an Irish, in inverted commas, film.
He's called in Bruges an Irish film.
Yeah, because they are Irish, yeah.
Okay. He said, Ray had to be dangerous and unpredictable, but also sensitive and dark and almost despairing at times. I'd seen Colin do dangerous and unpredictable before, and as soon as we met up and talked over the character, I knew he had all the other things in spades. But I heard an interview with Colin Farrell where he met with Madonna, and Madonna offered him the role, and he turned it down. He said it was a bad time in his career and in his life. He was feeling low, and he said to McDonough, I understand the public perception of me. It's not good. People think I'm a dick. Mm. People hate me. And I'll do the script and the character and the film a disservice by bringing all that baggage to this movie.
Wow.
Oh. Yep. And McDonough turned to him and said, thanks, but you're not the casting director, so shut the fuck up.
Oh, wow.
Telling it like it is. But yeah, McDonough says it takes
what
a lot.
What was it? What period was this?
I remember being very surprised. I've never not liked Colin Farrell, but I understand what he's saying. But that's what part of the joy was, wasn't it? That he's a revelation and all the rest of it. So what? Yeah, but what had he done just before this?
Obviously he was, you know, the drinking and the drugging and everything, and then there was the awful sex tape, which I think was the pivotal moment where it was like, oh my god.
Yeah.
So I mean, he was saying in this interview that I heard that he said if I saw me on the telly, I would think I was a fucking prick, just saying all these things, swearing all the time, showing up at events a bit drunk or with different women on my arm each time. And he'd not long finished Miami Vice, and the day he finished Miami Vice, he went straight to rehab, not for the first time. And so he was just a mess, really. And I think he felt like this self-destructive path he was on was A, going to kill him, but also, you know, destroying people's films and projects and things around him. So, I mean, the films weren't interesting films he was doing with great directors, But this was, this just felt, as you say, Vicky, it feels like a revelation watching him in this.
It's so weird, isn't it? I mean, it's, at least it's so self-aware of him to know that if you're an actor in the public eye, yeah, and you have that, people have that perception of you outside the movies, there is really no way of separating that. If it's got to the point where it's so dominant, mm-hmm, in people's understanding of you and opinion of you.
Yeah.
It's, you know.
And I think he'd not been vulnerable very often on screen. Mm. And so that's what McDonagh wanted him to do and thought he could do. And obviously, he's across both these films, the vulnerability is what really, I don't know, just it's sort of transcendent performances at both times, I think.
Yeah, and especially, I think, when we get to him on Thursday and the raft of movies that he's done in the run-up to Banshees of Inisherin. Yeah. I don't think, I mean, have they coined it yet? Is it a Farrasence? The Farrelacence?
It should
work
be.
Work on that.
Yep.
You've got a few days till Thursday.
I will. Yep.
So they had 3 weeks rehearsal time. This is the case on both films. He says he doesn't think this is a luxury, McDonagh. He says, I have no idea how you would make a movie without it. And he said at the start of that process, he tells the cast and crew why he wrote it, what it means, who the characters are, and then he just lets them say what they think. And what their thoughts are and who these characters are. He said it's to get all the crap about motivations out of the way. he said, I'm not interested in backstory. Make up what you like.
Everything I hear from Martin McDonagh, I grow to like him a little bit more.
He's an intriguing character. And the stories I've read around this say that Brendan and Colin aren't a million miles from these characters in real life and how they behaved on set. Production designer Michael Carlin said of the In Bruges shoot, Brendan liked to play his violin in a quiet bar with a few friends. If Colin never turned up, there'd be 1,000 women there in a few seconds, which used to annoy him a little bit. Which could be a scene from Banshees of Inisherin.
I wonder if that's why that line is in there, because it sort of sits slightly awkwardly. It's never followed up in Banshees, where someone says to Colin Farrell's character, the women all love Colm, don't they? Mm. And it's where he's in the bar surrounded by women playing his fiddle. I wonder if that's a joke,
yeah,
based on that story.
Yeah, that's funny, yeah. That's really funny. But yeah, that's a bit of background. Should we talk about the movie?
Sure.
So, Vicky.
Yeah.
We'll start with you.
I wonder why.
Why?
Because there's a voiceover.
Yeah.
So, hey, guess what? You hate writing plays, don't use a fucking voiceover. I'm just saying, look, obviously it's fine because it's the way that Colin Farrell delivers it, because he keeps saying In Bruges all the time. It's really funny. But, I have to die on this hill, don't I? You don't need the voiceover. There's another way of doing it. So I don't think it does get a pass.
I wondered if it was a sort of telling and not showing for budgetary reasons.
Yeah.
So we don't see these events happen in and around the Thames because they just didn't want to spend the money on shooting in and around the Thames with the, you know, chucking the gun in the river. And
also it would take you out of Bruges. The fact that it's almost entirely set in Bruges, you don't really want to see it anywhere else. It makes it more like the fairy tale.
Yeah, yeah. So Harry's instructions after this hit has gone wrong, Harry's their boss, is get the fuck out of London, you dumb fucks. Get to Bruges. Do you want a bit of boring trivia?
Sure.
Not good trivia.
Go for it.
Ken and Ray check into the hotel under the names Cranham and Blakely, who were the actors who played the two hitmen in Harold Pinter's The Dumb Waiter on telly.
Great.
Have you seen The Dumb Waiter?
No.
I saw it about 5 years ago with Martin Freeman and Danny Dyer.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, Pinter loves Danny Dyer, doesn't he? He uses Danny Dyer a lot.
I do love Danny Dyer.
Yeah.
So,
it's very good. Very good play. But, I mean, there are a lot of parallels with
Martin
this.
Martin Freeman was pissed off to be paired with Danny
Dyer? No, because Dyer's like Pinter's guy. but there's a lot of Harry Pinter in this story.
Right.
Okay. Of the two hitmen getting bored out of their minds.
Yeah,
that's what
the
dumb waiter basically is. And there's Samuel Beckett. There's a bit of Tarantino, isn't there? There's David Mamet. I remember at the time, everyone said, just based on the first few scenes, this is a Guy Ritchie movie, isn't it? This is a Guy Ritchie movie in another country, but with the same characters. But then I guess it goes somewhere a bit deeper than Guy Ritchie's.
I think
it goes to a more spiritual place.
Harry character is a bit Guy Ritchie. But that's not a compliment, because Harry's brilliant. But I can see why you'd think that.
Yeah, and Guy Ritchie's great. So they're stuck there for 2 weeks in a twin room. We've got Ray acting like a petulant child, calling Bruce a shithole. Ken's a bit more optimistic. He's happy to go around in a boat looking at stuff with the worst tourist in the world. What kind of tourist are you two?
Oh, good question.
This is a great question. I was thinking about this because my mum is a doer. Yeah. Like, on holiday.
I can see that.
She likes to do things.
Mm-hmm. Opposite my mum.
See, I'm like your mum then. I don't want to
Shall
do
we swap
anything.
Mums for a holiday?
But no, I
write that down.
I have a guilt now. If I go on holiday, because I've had this thing where I'm supposed to do stuff and see things and see culture, I would much rather go to the local pub, and that would be fun for me. To have a beer in Bruges is enough. I don't need to see any culture.
All right, I'm half and half. So if it's a beach holiday, I don't want to do any fucking sport. I don't want to see anything. I don't want to do anything. I just want to be on the beach and do fuck all. If it's a city trip, though, I want to do everything. I want to be Brendan Gleeson in the morning. Afternoon drink, we do nothing else after that point. Sure. That's me.
I went a series of holidays to it with my uni mates for the 5 years after we had food, and that's exactly what we did.
Yeah.
All day we worked really hard at the tourist thing and then had a really, really good night. And then tried not to be too hungover because we won't do the tourist thing again.
But you see, of the two things which brought the enthusiasm out of him,
just sure.
We do stuff in the morning, then we'd have a really good night.
Well, the daytime stuff was like a job. But it made us come back not feeling guilty for having wasted money and time.
And this is what I'm saying, it's a guilt thing. I think I do things because I do things, but it's out of guilt.
Yeah.
Mm. I was in Warsaw for what, 24 hours the other day?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we remember.
Good, because I don't. And I went to the old town in the morning just so I could go, I've seen Warsaw's old town.
And so you should.
Yeah.
So Ray meets an overweight family. He talks about, and this I'm quoting him, a black retarded girl on a seesaw. What do we think about this humour? Because I didn't find it as funny this time. I think my brain's been reprogrammed in the last 15 odd years. Is this funny and transgressive, which is what I thought it was when I first watched it, or is this just being offensive and shock value for the sake of it?
Oh, it's tricky. So when Ray says that about the girl on the seesaw, I was like, oof, no, that's no good at all. I don't really remember what I thought the other times, so maybe that's my brain being
I thought it was pretty funny.
But when Harry later says, we're not going to go and shoot 12 black kids or something, it's like, that's not the same joke. Do you see that there's a difference there, isn't there? And it made me not like Ray as much as I had liked him. I remember liking him in the past two viewings, because it's like, you're an idiot. Like, you can't say things like that. You shouldn't say things like that. And yet I still found a distinction between what he said and then what Harry says later. And is that me? Or is that...
Because I think we're supposed to like Ray, but it's hard to like him when he finds things like that funny.
Yeah.
What do you think, Al?
I mean, isn't it because he's just a bit stupid? It's something the character would say, obviously.
Yeah. Which is, you know, I always want to defend that point of view. But yeah, it just felt a bit much, Dennis.
I think it's the frequency with which things are dropped in. It's like racism, fat jokes.
Yeah, homophobic jokes.
Yeah, it's just there's so many of them. It feels like it's the script mistaking button pushing for edginess.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And we're supposed to love Ray, even though he killed a child. Sure. We're definitely supposed to.
I agree.
If we're not supposed to love him, we're definitely supposed to feel sorry for him. And you can't, you know, people can be more than one thing. You can be racist and I can still feel sorry for you, I guess. But it's just super hard because you're straight in with jokes like that. And it's a bit of a delicate balance.
But isn't it? I mean, I was thinking about this as I was watching it. It's such a testament to Colin Farrell's performance that he kills a child.
Yeah.
He says these things and yet you are fundamentally wanting the best for him by the end.
Most definitely. So they're trying to figure out why they're in Bruges. They can't understand why they haven't been sent to Croydon. you've made that better, mate. I wouldn't recommend a weekend
he's allowed
in
to say,
Croydon.
He's allowed to say
he's,
that.
God, I wouldn't
he's,
dare.
He's no. from Croydon, yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't.
Shit out. they're filming.
No one heard that.
I love Croydon. My parents live in Croydon. I love Croydon. Yeah. Crystal Pat Eagles.
Well done for whispering it, though. Directly into the microphone.
They're filming Midgets. It's a dream sequence in a Dutch movie, which is kind of like a Don't Look Now homage. But we meet our dwarf, Jimmy, played by Jordan Prentice.
Yeah.
Where do we know him from?
Oh, God. I looked him up. Oh, he's in something really we've done. What the fucking hell is it?
He's in something we've done on stage.
Oh, he's in Howard the Duck.
Yeah, he's the poor little boy that got like I think, pretty badly knocked about playing Howard the Duck in some of the scenes.
Yeah.
Because I was, it sort of lost the audience a bit when I was telling stories about this kid potentially getting burned while being stuffed into a duck suit.
Weird, isn't it? Maybe we should talk about what we're going to say on stage before our next live show, because that blindsided me a little bit as well. I'm like, you know, we're in a room with people.
He also,
I think we should rehearse everything.
Jordan Prentice also played a character in a Harold and Kumar movie. His role was giant bag of weed. Film within a film, Vicky.
Yeah.
You like it?
No. I just don't. I think it's good at the end when they're in the Bosch. They go to see the Bosch triptych, and then you're in it at the end. You don't really notice it the first time, and then you get to the end. You're like, oh, there are the characters from the painting. So this is purgatory. So I get all of that. But a film within a film just feels a bit too insular for my liking. But I'm really hardline about that stuff, and I don't like it if someone in a film is a writer, and I don't like it if they are creative in any way whatsoever. Yeah. So that's just
me. I didn't know that.
No. It's never come up.
We've never received that note, have we?
No, nothing. Yeah. Nothing we've ever written.
Yeah, it's fine, but a writer?
A writer?
Taking the piss. I do love the bit where she walks away and chucks the card over a shoulder.
So this is Chloe, who Ray chats up by saying a lot of midgets tend to kill themselves. Suppose they must get really sad about being really little. And that seems to charm her.
Yeah.
Charm the pants off her. So yeah, that's very cool, throwing the card.
But it's what's cool.
It's such a risky move.
It doesn't work.
No.
I have done it.
I hope not.
I have.
Have you really?
Yeah.
I'm not the only one who thinks things like that are cool and does them and then says them out loud and you go, what are you?
Yeah, you take such a gamble when you do stuff like that.
What? Tell us the situation.
Oh, I don't know.
You threw your business card at a woman. Gross, Chris.
At her. He didn't say at her. Did you throw it at her?
No, I think I might have said, I think you dropped something.
Ooh. He was a real ladies' man.
Oh, God. Wow. Throw it at her next time. That's better.
And we're now engaged.
It wasn't.
No.
Bloody hell.
What's cool about this, though, is she chucks it over the shoulder and you think that is fucking cool. And then he says,
yeah, he's really
that's fucking cool.
Yeah. Yeah. That's cute.
But it makes the script self-aware that it's doing something that you're like, oh, that's a bit like sort of self-consciously cool. Yeah. And then to reference it, it gets a pass.
Yes.
So this is a good moment, a positive moment for Ray. But next time we see him, he catches sight of an ugly dog and nearly starts crying, and then he sees some kids and we get a flashback, and we're going to talk about that flashback after this break.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces 3 thought-provoking questions over 3 glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know.
And then we'll weigh around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
So the flashback is to the hit, and it happens while doing confession. Amanda Ray murders Kieran Hines.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
In a very brief cameo. This is what he's doing for Harry. But, and I think it's very well shot, this, the stray bullet hits a kid.
Oh,
it's the way it's hit the kid. Like, because you could have shot that anyways. It could be a kid with a bullet hole in the side of his head or his chest or whatever. Mm. But the fact that it's just gone straight across his forehead and the way it's shot... A lot like Jenny on Thursday, it's a moment that is going to stay with me forever.
Mm. It's the list. That's the bit that I can't... I'm really stuck on it. It's so sweet. Did you see what the child's confession was? I can't remember it now. It's being bad at maths, being something else, and being sad. Mm. Oh, Jesus Christ.
Being moody, being bad at maths and being sad.
Oh, no.
So maybe it's a good thing he's dead if he was so moody and sad.
Oh, my God.
You're on a roll today.
I'm actually going to start crying.
Wishing moody kids dead, chucking your business card at women.
No, you dropped something.
Excuse me, love. Excuse me.
No, I haven't. Would you please fucking fuck off? And then we're in an art gallery and we're looking at the pain on the walls. This is The Last Judgment by Hieronymus Bosch. And it's obviously all tied together. The themes of purgatory, of being judged. Is this their last judgment that they're encountering? It causes Ray to ask Ken about purgatory. And then his description is, oh, you weren't shit, but you weren't all that great either. Like Tottenham. It's a very good line. I feel like he should have said Spurs, because at first, does he mean the city? Does he mean the bit of town?
But it's a football joke.
I thought he meant the bit of town,
it's exactly what Spurs are. So right. He should have said Spurs.
Okay. Yeah.
Spurs aren't shit, but they aren't all that great either. They're just eternally fifth. which is one outside the Champions League places.
It's also where we always come in the Pod Bible Awards every year.
Oh, there we are.
Oh, it's even you can call people and things a bit Spursy.
What do you think of Tottenham? What do you think of shit? Thank you.
That's all right. We ain't Tottenham. We ain't Tottenham.
So maybe we're a bit Spursy.
Great.
Oh dear. So this art, Ray isn't interested in the art. So my question here is he stupid or is it him not wanting to reckon with what he's done? Is this him putting off facing up to reality?
No, I think he just can't be saved, because what Ken is saying is, if you just do the things I want to do and we'll go and see the Jesus statue and we'll go and look at the art, then we, you know, you'll be okay. And you're showing that Ray doesn't understand, right? So A, he doesn't understand the danger he's in. He's like having a tantrum and walking out of these places when he really shouldn't be doing that. But it's giving Ken a reason to think, even if I saved you this time, I couldn't save you next time because you're a baby and you're not listening to me.
Yeah.
And you don't seem to recognise the situation and the gravity of the situation.
Mm.
So that's why he's just having a, like he says, you're having a moody. Like he doesn't get it and he'll never get it because he's too immature.
Or is he in denial? I mean, that's the other way of looking at it, because if he's immature and he doesn't realise the gravity of the situation, then that makes him less likeable, because he's basically dismissing the fact that he killed a kid.
No, he knows he killed the child. He just doesn't realise there are going to be such serious repercussions.
Right.
He thinks it's all on him. He's like, I feel sad about this. And then he tries to take his life because he feels sad. But he doesn't think that Harry's going to get him for it. And he definitely is.
But do you think Ken knows that at this point?
Ken doesn't know that yet.
No. But the film is going, this is why Ken will accept that something bad is going to happen to Ray, because he cannot save himself.
Mm. And we did get that bit of foreshadowing on the tower, didn't we, where Ken is pretending to shoot down and it's Ray standing in the courtyard below him. Mm-hmm. Yeah, although that isn't how he is going to assassinate
him. But that's why it's so good. Because he goes back up and you think, yeah, that's so good.
So yeah, this kid is dead because of the choices he made, and he's appreciating that, as Vicky says, if not the danger he's in. The quote he says is, I will always have killed a little boy that ain't ever going away unless I go away. Seen in a restaurant, raised date. I've written down escalation.
I love that he tries so hard, because we've all been in that position where someone, well, I have frequently, where someone's tutted or said something and you think, no, I'm just obviously going to leave that because I'm like with my family or whatever, and it's like gross. But then you're like, sorry, what? And then before you know what you've done it. And then obviously my situations don't go like that, but I do frequently shout at people in public space.
Yes. Yeah.
They started.
Sometimes us.
It's good. I couldn't decide. It feels... It's so well played by the American guy who, like, that's how it works.
Canadian,
sorry. Oh, yeah, of course.
The point. Because he punched him for John Lennon.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just, I don't know. It felt a little, I don't know. It felt really scripty, this bit.
Yeah.
Didn't feel very natural. Felt like a sketch almost.
I wrote down sketch as well, yes. I know. I see where you're coming from. I mean, I think a lot of both these films feels scripted, but it's fine, you know. It's part of the joy of them, I think.
Is
the use of language,
and I do love it, because it is fundamentally funny when the woman goes for him with a bottle and he punches her out. That's funny.
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
I am, because you set it up earlier. You can't come at someone with a bottle.
Yes.
So.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it would be awful business.
Oh, yeah.
But it's all in there, so.
So if a woman comes at me with a bottle, I'm not allowed to do that?
If we've had a conversation 20 minutes earlier where okay. I've said to you, that's unacceptable.
That's good to know. So now we get the moment where Harry calls Ken.
Oh,
this feels like the work of a first-time director, with the touch of evil playing in the background, with the most famous single take probably in film history, as he does a single take in his movie. But and we learn, we don't see Harry at this point, we just hear his voice. And he says, I wanted him to see Bruges before the end. And it slowly dawns on Ken what he's got to do.
Yeah, it's not that. It is that, sorry. It's when Brendan, when Ken is like, doesn't want to upset his boss. And he's like, the dual carriageway nearly wrecked it. And then when he tries to bring it back, like, what a masterful performance, where he's like, do you know what he said to me? He closed his eyes and he said to me, I feel like I'm in a dream. And he's taken the lie and run with it so much, just to get Harry, like, just to bring him down a little bit. Sorry, to make him calm down. It's just so perfect. Like, he's taking the piss out of him, so you know that he thinks Harry is a bit of a wild card and he's got his own way of doing stuff. But it totally works as well. Like, I just think he plays it brilliantly.
Yeah, it's one of the best scenes in the film, I think. And it's the minutiae of it as well, the bit where Harry makes him go and check outside the door, even though he's made up that Ray was there in the first place. It's great.
We cut to Ray getting caught by Chloe's boyfriend in bed. I think they were going to rob him. A gun with blanks. But
that's interesting, though. I've said this before. I love anything that I didn't know before in films. And I don't know whether this is true or not, but I've never seen in a film before this where someone fires a blank bullet in someone's face and it blinds them.
No.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I thought you meant like the grift of like robbing tourists. Like,
no.
That happens.
Yeah.
But it's partly there as well so that Ray can take Chekhov's gun.
Yes.
Now, we've got a massively coked up Ray, because he's also picked up some drugs. He approaches his new friend, Jamie, pokes him in the head. He's still upset that Jamie didn't wave at him earlier. Ray's just... Colin Farrell was making very good use of his eyebrows here to express confusion at what's happening around him. Tells them they're weird. He sent Ken off with the drugs. Ken returns with massive eyes. looms onto screen over his shoulder.
Give me a gram. I thought you were staying off it because it makes you depressed.
So we've got a drugged up party in a hotel room. More suicide chat going on.
It's very authentically done, this. this. Yes. It feels very good.
Yeah.
It's not too over the top. It feels like the kind of conversation that takes place in that hotel 100%. Room.
Jimmy's yeah. becoming obsessed with a race war. We learn that Harry killed the man who killed Ken's wife.
Yes.
Yeah, Harry killed the white man who killed Ken's black wife, is the detail they add in there, actually. And yeah, it's just funny and shocking and brief. They get in and out quickly, this scene. Ken leaves because there are too many hookers and a racist dwarf.
He calls them manky hookers. Mm. So it's the meanest thing he said, because he's describing... Oh. So he says two manky hookers.
I didn't read the K. Too many hookers. No, I've got it there.
There's never too many hookers. Two manky hookers and a racist dwarf is the nastiest thing he does and says, I think. He doesn't need to use that language, but he does. So, I mean, it's fine. He's a man in that situation, and he is a hitman for a living, so he's not an angel or whatever. But it is, like, pretty mean.
Yeah, agreed. We're into the park now. Ray's crying. Ken's watching him. And he pulls out his gun and approaches Ray to shoot him. Then he sees Ray put the gun to his own head, and he stops him. Oh, I love it.
It's great. Because obviously I can remember it from the first time I watched it. And the whole bit where Harry goes, you're going to have to kill Ray to Ken. I thought that was going to be a long drag out thing that was going to last for the rest of the movie. Yeah. And I was a little bit like, ugh, this is going to be a bit boring. Is he? Isn't he? When's he going to do it? Is he going to convince himself that he has to do it? Da, da, da. And the fact that it's over and done with in 15 minutes is
good.
Amazing. It's like, oh, wow, we're moving on to new turf.
Ray knows the truth. He breaks down and cries, and he's packing him off on a train straight away. So I agree with you. It's boring because you feel like you have seen that plot line before. Brendan Gleeson said of this moment in the film, he said that his character standing up for Ray in the city at this time liberates Ken to be able to envision hope and faith again for his own existence, one that has been so full of violence, which he's very good at for so many years. He does what he does for Ray because he's been given the gift from this young lad of hope. Which is an interesting way of looking at it from his acting point of view.
I like the bit where Ken says, Harry said he wanted to give you one last joyful memory before you died. And of all the times Colin Farrell says, in Bruges, this is the pinnacle. Where he goes, in Bruges! Brilliant.
It is just funny. I don't know why.
I couldn't decide whether the title should have had a question mark on it. That was the thing. After this scene, I was like, should it be in Bruges question mark?
We also learn it was Ray's first job where he killed the priest and shot the kid
Which is really interesting, because it's Ken that brought him in. So did he do it because he knew he was rubbish, because he's kind of given up, as in he wants out? Do you know what I mean? Like, that's Ken. It's not just that the buck stops with him, because it does. It's like, this is kind of your fault. Like, why would you get him to do that before he's ready to do it?
Yeah, he's brought in a guy who doesn't seem particularly well equipped to do that job.
Yeah.
Although, I mean, it was an accident. Anyway, Ken phones Harry and lets rip, and we see Harry for the first time.
Amazing.
And it's Ralph Fiennes.
And he destroys the phone.
For this casting, McDonough said, I wanted someone who hadn't done the archetypal working class London gangster type 100 times before. I wanted a very good actor who would have a different and more surprising take on it. It wasn't until I got on the set I realised how bloody scary Rafe can be. Mm. Have you not seen Schindler's List?
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
There's a look, like, I like the little things. Later on, when he goes to the Alcoves man to get his gun, and that punk kid, whatever, Chloe's boyfriend, forgotten his name, stands up to, like, square up to him, and Harry doesn't move at all and looks amused, but looks very scary and a little bit concerned because someone stood up to, but obviously not bothered in the least. Like, he barely even, like, blinks. And it's just the scariest thing you've ever seen. Like, a man who understands the potential and the power he's got, but also isn't an idiot and would obviously have that fight himself. Amazing.
This is post-Sexy Beast, isn't it, this movie? Because the only person who I've seen do a similar kind of thing is Ben Kingsley in Sexy Beast.
Well, in terms of a similar transformation, because we've seen a lot of actual Cockney hard men do this kind of performance, but it was sort of countercasting by having Ben Gandhi, essentially, and Ralph Fiennes do it. So do you like Ralph Fiennes in this role?
Yeah. Oh my God, I love Ralph Fiennes in this role. I think he's phenomenal. Mm-hmm. He just, like, literally, it's that point in the movie where you feel like you've seen a lot of what Farrell and Gleeson are going to be bringing to the table, and it just lights a fire under the whole thing.
And it's good to save the visual to this point, because you do need a bit of an engine for this next bit, because we've kind of tied everything up. And then it is a bit cheeky. Be like, oh, look, it's Ralph Fiennes. And that'll do for now.
But it works, doesn't it? The casting of a star does give it a little bit of a wow factor.
Yeah.
And we sort of get a sense of Harry's very strict code of ethics, which is obviously going to become increasingly important. We got the great scene with Ken and Harry sitting at a cafe. I always talk about it, but the Die Hard moment, he had to have his hero and his villain meet and talk to each other.
Yeah.
Before they get to the killing. And so it's so hard to write, but they nailed it here in this public place, and they have a moment before it turns really dark.
You're suicidal. I'm suicidal. Everybody's fucking suicidal. It's great.
And at the same time, the police have arrested Ray, and he's been brought back to Bruges. So, Harry thinks Ray is somewhere in Europe, because Ken doesn't realise Ray's back, and so it's all very cleverly, it's complicated, but it all works.
It's all action and consequence.
Exactly.
Everything that happens because they put it in motion. There's nothing coincidental,
And speaking of set up and payoff, we get to the tower, and the officious guy that works there, who was rude to Ken, gets beaten the shit out of by Harry.
Yeah.
It's quite funny, but dark. Jimmy, at this point, is dressed as a schoolboy.
Mm.
Sort of a bit of a Harry Potter nod, that kind of thing, but also, this is obviously going to come into play. Now, have you ever seen the film Living in Oblivion?
No.
Amazing Steve Buscemi film. Peter Dinklage is in that, mm-hmm. playing a dwarf who gets cast in a movie for a dream sequence.
Right.
And I went back and rewatched that scene, and this is what Peter Dinklage's character says in that. Have you ever had a dream with a dwarf in it? I don't even have dreams with dwarves in it. Only place I've seen dwarves in dreams is in stupid fucking movies. Which essentially is the same thing that Jamie's doing here. He's almost saying the same thing later in this movie. But anyway, he's in play. They're up the top of the tower. Ken lays down his gun. He tells Harry he loves him. And Harry says the boy had to be let go. Oh, sorry. Ken says the boy had to be let go. The boy had to be given a chance. And Harry shoots him in the leg. Now, I think Harry is going to leave him here, isn't he?
Yep.
He says differently in a minute, but Ken's going to survive this if that other bloke doesn't show up and tells him the truth about Ray. At which point, Harry kills Ken and says, you can't kill a kid and expect to get away with it. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know, he's contradicting himself a bit there, but obviously that line is very important as well. We've got some great music coming in now. It's called On Raglan Road by the Dubliners, this really haunting, beautiful piece of Irish music. And I think the film kicks up another gear here. You've got Ken crawling to the top of the bell tower with his gun. Down the bottom, Ray is kissing Chloe. It's this false dawn, this hope for him, like he's returned and he's found love and there's a chance for him, a possibility, a future, but we know what's approaching him at this time. And then Ken drops the change.
Oh, so I love good. That.
Wow. That's brilliant writing, isn't it?
Yeah.
You would think you've had the great idea by having him throw himself off the top of the tower.
Yeah.
But to sprinkle the change first time.
Yeah.
There's three things. There's the dropping of the change, the fact that he does up his jacket before he jumps.
Well, he straightens his tie. He straightens the tie as well.
Yeah.
People are looking up. And yeah, he jumps. Mm. He jumps and it's a big splat, isn't it?
It really is.
That dummy... Fun trivia fact, people.
Is this good trivia or boring trivia?
No. It was full of all sorts of stuff from the butcher's shop.
Okay.
But it's a bloody mess. And he says, Harry's here, my gun. I'm going to die now,
I think. Can still talk, so...
We'll come to that in a bit. Okay. I'm sort of not convinced that this moment needs
it's
to happen.
It's a very high drop.
I don't think it is my actual change, so we can do it now. But I'm just like, it's enough that he splats... Ray looks over, sees Harry, so Ken did the job. I know there's the gun information that needs to be exchanged in some way, but it's just that bit where you're like, there is no way you're having, not forget like the fact you could still be alive, but you're not having a coherent conversation.
I could.
I reckon.
Not a lot. I wouldn't be monologuing.
But enough.
Maybe a little a gag. A pun, if I can think of one.
Of course.
And then we've got a chase. And I'm a bit unhappy watching it this time. The choice of heavy rock guitar music here takes me out of the film a bit. And it doesn't feel quite in keeping with this sort of classical the visuals we've got here, because the snow starts falling. And there's a good sequence. I think the woman who owns the hotel, I think, is a really good character. I think she doesn't have much to do, but she really makes her mark each time, just calling these blokes out on their bullshit, basically.
I find it weirdly annoying. Okay. I always have, all three times, like, that she's like, you stupid men, sort it out. And she's pregnant and she does look, she has, you know, the character is smart enough to look a bit like, oh shit, I shouldn't have done this, when they've got a lot of guns and whatever. But I don't know. I just find it's a weird time to make a stand for two people you don't know, I think.
Harry says this is the shootout. It's being a bit too clever for its own good, maybe, here. I don't know. They have a funny back and forth. Ray jumps on the back of a boat and Harry shoots him from distance and he gets him. This is a quote from McDonough. As the film progresses, Bruges becomes darker and its gothic qualities come to the fore. The night scenes showcase that even earlier, such as when Ray happens upon the Ronis Bosch-inspired movie set. And so now we're in the Bosch-inspired movie set. And it's, I mentioned earlier, but it becomes very Don't Look Now here. Harry shoots Ray multiple times in the back and a bullet hits Jimmy.
Mm.
So we've got a transference of guilt going on here and this theme of consequences, catching up with people. Harry says, oh, I see.
Oh.
And then he adds, you've got to stick to your principles.
It's so funny and so dark.
He shoots himself in the mouth. But Ray, even though he's got a ton of bullets in his back, tries to stop him.
Yeah.
I think that's an interesting moment. What's he doing there? Why would he want to save? I mean, he knows the truth.
Mm.
Is this... the good we're seeing in him, is this some form of penance? Because this bloke's trying to kill him, and yet he wants to save his life.
I think it's because Ray's just a bit stupid, and he's just like, oh, I can see what you think, but it's not that.
Yeah.
And then we get a voiceover, Vicky.
Yeah.
A bit more of Ray's guilt. He says, at least in prison or in death, I wouldn't be in fucking Bruges. Maybe that's what hell is, the entire rest of your fucking eternity in Bruges.
I just remember I got told off by a police officer in Bruges. That's what I've remembered.
Mm-hmm. Was it because you kept going about Ghent?
She's really sticking the fucking knife into Bruges this episode.
No,
how much are Ghent paying you?
I would cross the road when there wasn't a green person, and I got done for jaywalking. Is that what it's called? Yeah, I didn't have a clue what he was talking about. He was like, hey. I was like, what? What's the matter? You can't cross. I was like, why? There's no traffic. I was like, you're the traffic. You know, I'm like, you're the traffic.
Why were you crossing?
Because there was no traffic and the person was red, but there's no traffic. I can make that decision myself, can't I?
Not in some countries.
No, I not in Belgium.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I said, I'm really sorry, please don't find me, officer.
Be careful in America as well.
I know, so I ran for my life.
You ran away from a police officer?
I just thought if I keep talking, I am going to get arrested because I'm going to say something bad. So.
It is self-aware.
So Ray's final words are, I really, really hoped I wouldn't die. I really, really hoped I wouldn't die. And then we see through his eyes, I think, the ceiling of the ambulance, and then it cuts to black. So is that the film ending, or is that him dying?
I just don't know. And also, I think it's a bit of a problem that I also don't care, which is challenging. I wasn't like, oh, Ray's dead, that's sad. And I wasn't like, oh, he might live, that's brilliant. I don't know why, and it's not to slight the film. Just when I wasn't sure if he died or not, I was like, meh, either way, it doesn't matter.
Is it a coward's ending as well to make it ambiguous?
Interesting.
Alex. Know.
Well, it's my fucking change, mate. I can do it now.
I've not got to that bit yet.
Right, okay. So,
all right. Well, should we go to
don't know. Let me think. Let me mull for about 7 minutes.
Make it 2. Because we're going to do the bits.
Great.
Yay.
So,
I've got a great change, by the way.
What's your favourite scene, Vicky?
Top of the tower when he buttons his jacket and you realise he isn't going to, even though it's weird that you think he is going to shoot him from there, but it's in your brain because they set it up earlier and he doesn't, and then you realise he's going to splat himself. It's really good.
Alex?
It's Brendan Gleeson jumping off the tower and dropping the coins beforehand.
Yeah.
As you said, it's good writing.
It's good writing.
It's good writing.
This guy's going to go
far. Fucking good writing, mate.
All right. As you pick that, which is the best moment, I'm going to pick the moment when coked up Brendan Gleeson looms behind Colin Farrell with big saucer eyes. It's really funny. Alex, most valuable whatever.
It's almost Colin Farrell because, as I said earlier, to be a character that has murdered a priest and a little kid and said some questionable things for a large portion of this film and stolen drugs, that's not that bad.
No.
I think it's just amazing that you do care about what happens to him. I know you said at the end that it's a bit of a question mark, like why you don't care more what happens to him. We'll get to that in a moment. But Ray Fiennes as Harry, I just think he's electrifying. And I know that's a bit of a hoary word, but it's the word that I can only use to describe him. He is electrifying in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Vicky.
Brendan Gleeson. It's just very, I don't know, every time you watch it, you really want it to be Colin Farrell because he's just so lovely and sweet and a little boy and all the rest of it. But Brendan Gleeson is brilliant. And a lot of it is because that's how I am when I'm a tourist. I want to do all the things and I want to just see all the stuff and all the rest of it. But, he's doing a lot of the big emotional arc work as well, which is like he's got to kill his son effectively. And you can see that play out with him. And then he gets that big moment at the end. So him.
Are you picking Colin Farrell because then everyone gets a nice vote?
No.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to pick Martin McDonagh.
Sure.
Because I guess I just love that this is your first film out of the gate. We've talked about a few criticisms we got of it, but I still love it. It was just such a thrilling watch at the time to hear this new voice in cinema. And the way he uses language, I just love. And we'll talk about that more on Thursday. But yeah, I've got to give it to him, this one.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
And what would you change? I don't think I'm going to do your change this week, today. But Vicky, let's do yours, Vicky.
You won't like this, right? I don't like the fact that Jimmy dies because he hasn't really... He's been racist on coke, okay, but all right.
Yeah, he's quite a likeable chap, isn't he? He apologises for that and says it's not him.
But then this is a shit end as well. Like, shouldn't Ray's actions accidentally save an actual little boy who was near Jimmy? And then you wrap all that stuff up, like all the things that Ken is saying about live and save the next one. Can't he have that as his ending? And then he doesn't really give a shit if he lives or dies because he put it right, kind of thing. Mm. But I don't really know how that would work.
Yeah, and it's just that this is Martin McDonagh's sense of humour. That's the trouble.
Yeah,
to kill the racist dwarf.
Yeah,
and then for the villain to think that it was a child and because of his own code of ethics to kill himself. I just feel like this is the man that.
Yeah.
This is what he
ultimately,
wants.
Ultimately, what I don't want this, and it is I'm asking a lot because obviously he's very very gifted, but it's like what have we seen a story about? Like the person that you feel bad for out of all of it really is Ken, but he was at the end of the road. He was probably a bit knackered and ready to and that life really only ever ends one way anyway.
Ken's killed a lot of people.
Ken's killed exactly. So it's like, what did he think he was going to retire in the sun? Probably not. And then Harry's dead, and so, you think, maybe lots of people will be saved because he's not roaming the streets of London being a naughty boy or whatever. But you've just seen these three people kill each other effectively because of stuff that they've done, but then Jimmy is the collateral damage in all of that, and he doesn't really deserve that.
I guess it depends on where you sit on the fence about Jimmy. If you feel that Jimmy, like being, a racist dwarf
on
coke.
Yeah, maybe we should start calling him a racist man.
Yeah.
I think.
If you don't like Jimmy and you're like, well...
He deserves to die.
He deserves to die.
Only in film logic. But I still even think with the film logic, it's a bit of a stretch because he says sorry for it and he gets a big moment at the end where he's like, he gets to explain his context and his situation, which is like, I don't like doing this stuff, but what are you going to do kind of thing.
I'm kind of with you. This is a real cop-out, but if there's a way where it looks like Jimmy is a little boy who's dead, but he's not actually dead, he's just... But to Harry, it's enough.
Yeah.
He could be standing by the stretcher as Ray's been.
Yeah.
That's better.
That's a good change.
I'll do my change now because it's a change. It's not very good, but it's one I felt passionate about since I saw this film in 2008. Martin McDonagh said he was worried Ralph Fiennes' accent would be Dick Van Dyke and was relieved when it wasn't. Unfortunately, Martin McDonagh's wrong. It's quite Dick Van Dyke. I really hate his Cockney accent. It completely takes me out of the movie. I wish I could be more thoughtful with this.
Flawless. I think it's...
You've got to cast a Cockney. People cannot do a Cockney accent.
What, Ralph Fiennes can't?
It's terrible.
Is it?
I think it's terrible.
Really?
I've lived here for 23 years.
Yeah, this is your clash question for Wednesday, Chris. Is Ralph Fiennes' accent in this a good or bad Cockney accent?
It's terrible.
Is it really? Well, I cannot bear it.
I cannot bear it. Don't ask posh people to do Cockney accents. They're not capable of it.
I think it's great. All right, fine.
Fair enough.
So, you do your proper change now, Alex.
Ralph Fiennes cannot do a Cockney accent. You need to just hire posh people. They can't do it. No, it's kind of what Vicky said. I think you both said it. The ending, it's the ambiguity of the ending doesn't work. It feels like a cop-out ending. It feels like you need to go one way or the other. Ray needs to either die or Ray needs to survive and you need to see the aftermath. It's lazy ambiguity. It's not that ambiguity that makes you go, oh, wow, I wonder. Let me think about that. You're just like, all right,
Done. Yeah. And you forget about the movie, which is what an ambiguous ending should not do.
Okay, so your change was what I just said. Yeah. I was going through the film.
Yeah, I was agreeing with you.
Cool.
I thought you'd like that.
Worth the wait.
Wow, happy fucking birthday.
That's in Bruce Dunn.
Yeah. Okay, everyone all right?
Before we do the Clash Cue,
did you send it?
What are you talking about?
We talked about it last week.
So neither of us have done...
Oh, was it a surprise?
Okay,
it was just discussed last week on the way to the station. Don't need to send it twice.
Right, okay.
What film do you think is going to win the best picture... Oh, yeah! At this year's Oscars!
Oh, yeah, sorry.
So Vicky and I haven't seen a lot of these films. But Alex has seen all of them, so I thought we'd have a quick chat about it. So I'm going to go through the list. This came from Gemma Page, by the way, this question.
Well, then that gives it validity that I need. Carry on.
And so this is them in order of their Rotten Tomato score, highest to lowest. So the highest rated... Best Picture nominee on Rotten Tomatoes is Top Gun Maverick with 96%. Then Banshees of Inisherin, Everything Everywhere All at Once, The Fablemans, Women Talking, All Quiet on the Western Front, Tar, Elvis, Avatar, Triangle of Sadness. I have seen two of them, but they're
I've
both...
seen all of them!
But the two I've seen are very much in the running, and so I've got a voice here. Vicky, what have you seen of these?
The Banshees of Inisherin.
Okay, the Banshees of Inisherin.
That's gonna sweep the board.
So have you got a prediction, though, of what you think will win?
The Banshees of Inisherin.
Okay, yeah.
I think it would be... I'm not that professional.
Is this just because it's the only one you've seen?
Weird to make a stab at things I haven't seen? I think Tar will win, to be honest, because it's an Oscar-baiting fucking film.
It absolutely won't, but it is fucking brilliant.
So
it's
Alex,
absolutely brilliant.
You've seen all of these.
Yes.
Which one is your favourite?
which do I want
your
to win?
No, I'm asking which one is your personal favourite?
Oh, man, I have to look at it really clinically. I actually think it would be very exciting if the world woke up on March the 13th and the headline was Top Gun Maverick wins Best Picture.
It's not going to happen.
I know it's not going to happen, but there is a little part of me that thinks perhaps the Oscars should make that happen so that people go, shit, the Oscars is rewarding a movie I've actually seen as opposed to one that I've never fucking heard of.
Well, then shouldn't it go to Avatar because more people have seen it?
Potentially, but it still has to go to something good. So...
Oh, no, I've seen Everything Everywhere All at Once. I'll tell a lie. And I enjoyed that, Gemma, if you're listening. I thought that was a good film.
Yeah.
So that might win because I've seen it.
Have you seen Tar yet?
No, I haven't. So, do you know what? I know I'm being a baby, but it just looks so boring.
Right. The first hour, I was like, Vicky's absolutely right. This is boring. And then the second hour, you're like, oh my God, this might be the best film I've seen this year.
All right. I don't know. Your recommendation goes a long way, but it's such a hurdle. It looks so dull.
Alex, which one of these is your favourite? Like your personal favourite film of the 10.
Oh my God, that's a great question. Which is
I've
my
asked it
favorite.
About six times.
That's a great question, Chris. I wish I'd heard it earlier.
But I thought you said Tar when I spoke to you last time.
And I think, honestly, and I'm so surprised that I'm surprised that is my answer. But of the films on that list, the one that I've watched, and I watched them all in about the space of a week, apart from Top Gun Maverick, which obviously I saw last year, and Everything Everywhere All at Once, I think Tar is, I just was so fascinated by, and it's her performance, and I think she is going to win Best Actress. I think that's pretty much nailed on. I think Michelle Yeoh would be a wonderful winner, but I think Kate Blanchett is going to win Best Actress, but Tar is probably my favourite of those films. It's not going to win Best Picture.
Kate Blanchett, Michelle Yeoh, split the vote. Andrea Riseborough sneaks in there.
Press that button.
So the key question is now, what do you want to win and what do you think will win?
Okay, well, I've already said I think it would be, I'm sort of being a bit arch, but Top Gun Maverick would be an amazing winner.
Yeah.
I really think it would be a great thing if that won. I think what will win, and I'd put some money on this, I think Steven Spielberg is going to get Best Director over the Daniels. Come with me on this journey. Mm. But I do think Everything, Everywhere, All at Once is going to win Best Picture.
Really?
I'd put all my money on that.
Shall we put some money on it?
The odds aren't great.
Okay.
The odds aren't great. So I think that will win. But the one I would want to win is Banshees.
Okay.
I've said that since I saw it. I love that film.
Okay, well, that's going to make the Jeopardy element of Thursday a bit dull.
Good job, it's your birth.
Not like you.
About the same level as I love in Bruges.
There he is.
Great.
Yeah.
Cash Cue done for another week.
Thanks, Chris.
Good stuff. Glad we all remembered that. all right, then. That is it. Farch was for 1 week only. So next week, regular service resumes. We're back to picking the clashes ourselves, which means, I believe, Chris has the clue.
Mmm.
You haven't done a clue, have you?
No, so let me think.
What has happened?
Oh, let me look at my watch. Oh, I can't, it's all going all over the place. Oh. Is that any good?
Flipping out.
I mean, that's
oh my God.
In 4 years of doing the show, that might be the worst moment that has ever been broadcast.
I feel nauseous.
It was improvisation. I hope I'm in a safe space.
You are. I'm so sorry. We shouldn't have called you out like that. That's rude.
I can't tell the time.
Oh, flipping heck. Can we watch?
It's all over the place.
This is awful. Look, I've got goosebumps. It's so awful. Oh my God.
I want to be away from you in case I catch
okay. that. End show. End show. All right, we're back on Thursday talking to Banshees of Inisherin and revealing the winner of this week's Clash. Until then, have a great week. Bye-bye.
Clash of the Titles is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.